From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a local tenant went to city court. That tenant was accused of not paying their landlord. The sum of the alleged missed payments was $100. That case is one of thousands of landlord-tenant cases in this county. And just since Tuesday, 74 tenants have been summoned to court. As local legal experts tell us, the number of evictions cases is enormous. And due to the economic fallout caused by the pandemic, it could double or triple in the months to come. But this morning, local leaders in a number of sectors announced an effort to curb that looming crisis, calling it SCIP, the Special COVID Intervention Part, a court structure that will streamline landlord-tenant cases and connect people facing eviction with legal and housing support services. The program's a collaboration between federal, county, and city leaders who are working with local nonprofits in the court system. It includes legal counsel, emergency rent assistance, financial counseling, and other support services to prevent homelessness. This hour, our guests discuss the current state of housing and eviction in Monroe County and the possible impact of the new SCIP program. Joining us today, welcome back to the program, Alex Turner, an eviction prevention representative for the Homeless Services Network and Community Resource Services Program Director at Catholic Family Center. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, Evan, great to be back.
And Mark Moyo is with us, Program Director of the Housing and Consumer Law Unit, the Legal Aid Society of Rochester, New York. Mark, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Evan. Thank you for having me.
I'd like both of you to just start by kind of laying out the landscape of exactly how serious the moment is. Because, Alex, when I've talked to you earlier this summer, certainly there was an eye on the horizon saying things are tight and tough. Now, I mean, frankly, even outside of a pandemic, there's a lot of people who are, facing a lot of struggle when it comes to eviction, housing, et cetera. But here we were a few months ago saying, if things don't change, we're looking at an eviction crisis across this country that could just be a cascade of problems in a lot of communities. Where are we now with that, Alex?
So, unfortunately, Evan, we're in largely the same place that we were back when we talked about this last time. There's been some movement on moratoriums, but in terms of rent relief, we've announced some new programs, and those new programs are exciting. But in the scale of the problem that we're facing in terms of the tens of thousands of households that are really struggling to pay rent, either because they had hours cut or because they had additional expenses through this pandemic, that those tens of thousands of households need that additional help. And we've got some programs that are going to be great. And our community is working together in ways that we haven't before. It's if you heard the press release and press conference this morning with Joe Morelli and others in the community, the progress that we've made is really second to none in the state. But the problem is just as big as it was before in terms of the tens of thousands of households that are facing eviction.
And Alex, when people are facing eviction, generally speaking, do the people in that dire circumstance, are they aware that there's going to be help available for them, or are they aware of what is available?
We're doing our best to make sure that they are. The press release this morning was definitely the start of that. Now that we've got an integrated intake for all of the programs that are providing rental assistance in our community, our job now is to support that process by getting the word out about it. Lots of folks do know about 2-on-1, but there's more folks that can learn and making sure that the word of mouth gets out there to folks who may have never faced this situation before. There's lots of folks who have worked all their lives and have been used to being able to make rent and are facing a new situation in their lives. And so getting the word out to them and into those communities is another important part of this.
Mark, how do you see the landscape of eviction and where things stand with a lot of people who might be right on the edge right now?
So the work that we're doing in court right now, as Judge Johnson pointed out today on the press conference, is working through cases that were scheduled before the shutdown started on the 17th of March. So all the cases that I'm seeing over at court are cases that were set to be heard or were previously decided before March 17th. So right after March 17th, where they were set to be heard for those dates, but were never heard. So I'm seeing a lot of people coming in who owe a lot of rent, but this isn't even really the possible glut that we're thinking about coming through of people who couldn't pay rent April, May, June, July, on and on, because of the pandemic. These are folks who were possibly behind beforehand.
Mark, how much do you think what's been announced and rolled out today is going to make a difference?
I think it has the opportunity to make a great difference. So these are some of the ideas that I've been working with members of city council, other legal service providers, folks with the County of Monroe. I don't want to leave anybody out, but that we've been working on for years, which is why we were able to implement this once we were given the go-ahead and some funds to do it. So it's been in the process and things that we've been thinking about for many years, and now we're able to do it. So the it's going to be in the implementation. It's going to, in some cases, depend on the decisions of judges or appellate judges as to how these things are applied. But I think the opportunity to have an attorney and then to be able to apply, you know, right in front of you, right at court, for assistance in terms of money to get your rent paid can be really, really helpful. That way people aren't running around the, you know, all of downtown or even further to attempt to get some assistance. So it'll be right there. You'll have an attorney who can guide you through the process and, you know, assert defenses if necessary.
Listeners, if you've got questions about this program and frankly about the state of eviction, the state of affairs for people who might be facing a struggle or not knowing what exactly to do, I often hear from landlords. There's a lot of questions, I know. You can call the program. It's toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections@wxxi.org. Alex, as we talked about before, I think we've got to hit this just about every time because, you know, we always hear from landlords who give us some kind of perspective that sounds like this. They say nobody wants to evict anybody because that's, you know, puts us in a position where we don't have anybody paying the rent. But if they're not paying the rent, how do we not evict them? We have to pay our mortgage. Why don't they have to pay their rent? I hear that every time we talk about this issue on the program. How would you address that?
I absolutely can empathize with the situation that they are in. And unfortunately, these moratoriums are creating that problem and really making it worse without the rent relief to back it up. Now, we have some rent relief that's out there or some kind of income side of this, that we have legal protections that keep tenants from being evicted. But at the end of the day, without rent relief, that burden is being borne entirely by landlords. I've heard from a friend of mine who is a landlord, has four units, and he is down $12,000 out of pocket just with the four units that he has. And I'm sure that there's landlords that are facing worse situations, and that's with having to pay the mortgage and everything else. So I absolutely can hear the struggles of landlords. And I think that we need to think bigger in terms of the policy solutions that we're suggesting to make sure that we can take care of not only the tenants who need housing, because housing should be a human right, but the landlords who are providing that service, because they provide a valuable service in terms of maintaining the housing stock in our community and providing housing, keeping it livable, keeping it safe and habitable. And those are all things that landlords are providing too. And we need to make sure that we take care of them. And I'm grateful that we have these programs to pay these rental arrears. But unfortunately, especially in situations where tenants have made some poor decisions or may have misunderstood the moratorium, those are going to be some of the loudest situations and where there's the most arrears. And that's where these programs may be least able for us to help. So I want to make sure that we're always thinking of that. And in the rooms where we're talking about decisions with these types of programs, we're always keeping that in mind.
Well, Alex,
there's also.
Yeah. And how much of where we are right now is because of COVID?
Oh, gosh. Mark made a great point this morning in the press conference that we had an eviction crisis before COVID. The courts were full and we were seeing up to 3,000 evictions a year in Rochester before COVID. And so and Jamie Saunders made a great point that we're going to see 2, 3, 4 times as many evictions, or at least people at risk of eviction, waiting in lines to get through the courts over the next 12 months. So that could be, we definitely had a crisis before this, but in terms of where we're at right now, a huge portion of it is to do with the fact that we asked people to stay home, but the policy solutions that we created to keep them home and to keep them housed, just we didn't think big enough.
Well, I think Mark Moyo, I think you said, what, nearly 40 cases a day, 5 days per week?
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was something, not a speech, but a list of facts that I had developed over the years to tell people when, people who aren't familiar with what goes on at landlord-tenant court or about renters in Rochester, that, you know, in 2018, 8,700 cases were filed or thereabouts. And Alex is correct in terms of warrants of eviction, where people were fully, you know, where a warrant was issued and a person was fully locked out, we're a little above 3,000 for that year that we have the best records for. But yeah, 8,700 cases filed, and that's not people, right? That's essentially families, or it could be as many as 5 or 6 people that are under one of those cases. So when I would bring those facts to bear, that it happens, people would say, well, how often does court happen? It happens every business day. There are 40 cases on the docket, and you know, you can do the math from there of how many people are could be possibly affected each week. So it's just kind of a shock to people when they hear those types of numbers.
Well, and Mark, you know, again, you're talking about something even pre-pandemic, but in this pandemic, we have had this, frankly, bizarre disconnect. I mean, I'm looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average now, and I'm listening to what the president says, and the Dow Jones today is not that far off from its all-time high. It is higher than it was in mid-March. And the president talks about this wonderful rebound and how well things are going. How much of a disconnect do you feel, Mark? And I don't mean to just aim at the president here. I'm not just talking about the White House. I'm talking about political leaders from a lot of different backgrounds, from both major parties, a lot of different levels of government. How much do they not often see and connect with the people who rarely have a voice? And that's the people who are right on the edge of economic catastrophe. How much do you see that disconnect?
I mean, I think it's tremendous. And those are the folks that, I, at least locally, that I would bring those facts out to about how many people are at risk of eviction every week. And, you know, that it would be a shock for a moment and they'd think about it and try and rationalize it away or take it and do something with it. And I would invite people to come to landlord-tenant court, and some local officials took me up on that, to see what it's like to sit there with someone and hear their story and to see the fear and anxiety that might come with the possibility of losing your home. But in terms of the national conversation, I guess it depends on, let's say, what silo or bubble you're in. So I see a lot of noise about, not noise, but a lot of talk about eviction and eviction prevention on the news and the Twitter feed that I read. I don't know if everybody sees that, but I think it's, you know, it's obviously in, let's say, the president's political benefit to say that everything is great. And that the stocks are going the way they have because of some, you know, bureaucratic arcane things that the Fed has been doing. So that people who buy a lot of stocks just aren't at risk right now. So that is where I think that's going. I think it just gives somebody something to point to that might be positive. Whereas I think almost every day for the past however long, almost 1,000 people or more than 1,000 people have died in the United States of COVID-related complications or COVID itself. So I don't see a lot of bright spots, but that's me personally.
Alex, how do you see that disconnect? I mean, and I ask because I think everybody by April was going, boy, the Dow is like, this is bizarre. I mean, like, is Wall Street ever going to be reflective of job loss and economic pain and all of the things that were happening? And now we're like 6 months later here. We have people facing an eviction crisis. We have a large number. I mean, Joe Morelli mentioned the jobless claims number during that morning meeting. The Department of Labor in the week ending September 12th, the advanced figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims, 860,000. It was 900,000 the week before. I mean, it's a huge amount of people. I don't know how we have built this economy that is totally unreflective of literally millions of people who are in pain. How do you see it?
It's absolutely. The image that keeps coming to mind is Wile E. Coyote having run off the end of a cliff, and he hasn't looked down yet. That we've got a situation where there's really nothing supporting this, the fantasy that's happening in the top some percentage, 10% maybe, of people in terms of wealth and income, where the folks around them are working from home and still making their incomes. But there's 30% of America that's getting unemployment in some form or fashion, and their income dropped dramatically in August, and they don't know what they're going to do. And it's all so uncertain that even with the extra benefits, another stimulus check or the $300 that are coming in these unemployment benefits in some state somewhere for some amount of time that's unsure, that all that uncertainty adds on top of this that people can't plan, that people on the edge of poverty have a hard time planning in general just because of the way that the traumas impact their lives. But with add on top of it all the uncertainty of what's going on, I just really think that when we get into November and December and into January, and we see where the virus goes and we see where these evictions go and how they impact, and that cascades up the chain to landlords and to the folks that they're paying and the bills that they have to pay, that eventually the bill is going to come due, and that's going to impact. I mean, Wile E. Coyote is going to have to look down at some point. And I without some larger policy solutions, I shudder to think where we're headed.
Talking to Alex Turner, an eviction prevention representative for the Homeless Services Network and Community Resource Services Program Director at the Catholic Family Center, and Mark Moyo, Program Director of the Housing and Consumer Law Unit for the Legal Aid Society of Rochester, New York. And we're talking about not only the problem that renters face, the challenge that they're facing in this pandemic, but really it was a challenge, a mounting crisis even before the pandemic, and now it's just gained velocity. So let's make sure our listeners know exactly what's new here. And if you're just joining us, Alex, can you go back over Skip? Take me through what's new here.
Absolutely. So we talked a lot about the problem. Let's talk about the solution. So Monroe County has come together really in an unprecedented way, and Mark and many others have been working on these kinds of solutions for years, and now they're really coming to fruition. So what the county announced, what the county and city and Joe Morelli announced this morning, is that there is a new special court that is helping to prevent judgments going against tenants, to try to figure out some pre-court settlement that landlords and tenants can agree to that will help to prevent an eviction. And the other side of this is the eviction prevention pilot initiative that's being spearheaded by systems integration. And 211 is acting as an integrated front door for all of the eviction prevention and homelessness prevention programs in our community. So that's at this point half a dozen agencies, and we're looking to add more to the back end of this. But this is really unprecedented, and we're ahead of the curve in the state and probably around the country in terms of that level of coordination. So what's new is that pre-court settlement process through SCIP, and the access to counsel that is being provided by agencies like Mark's and others, and the EPI program, the Eviction Prevention Pilot Initiative, that's providing eviction prevention financial assistance through that single front door, which is really something that we've wanted for years. We've talked about it for years, and it's come to fruition, and we've been piloting it for the last few weeks, and it's worked extremely well. We do have a large number of cases that we're working through, and so folks need to be patient, but it is that single front door, and folks can reach half a dozen agencies, and that number is growing to be able to access financial assistance if they're facing eviction.
All right. So, Mark Moyo, a common question is who's eligible for help here? Let's start there. Let's talk about what that process is going to look like. Who's eligible, Mark?
That's a great question, Evan. So we basically, in the past, anybody who's getting evicted, unless they make a ton of money and something else has happened, we help them at court. The Legal Aid Society is willing to represent people at city court just on the basis of the fact that they're getting evicted. And then now there are some strictures that are around some of the cases that we can take in terms of area median income and the percentage and things like that. That's for a number of cases. I don't want to go into every single level that we can help. What I would say, I think this is a two-step process, that if you owe your landlord money and you have some proof of that, whether it's a ledger or what we call a 14-day notice, which is the start of a court process, it's not a court paper, but it's the start of the court process, I think that you should call 211, have an intake done to see if you can get some financial assistance and maybe avoid going to court in the first place. If, on the other hand, things have gone a little bit further and you do get court papers, we have a phone number for you to call that is the group of legal service agencies. So you'd call 585-504-6195. Someone there will do an intake for you, and then the case will be distributed to either the Legal Aid Society or Law New York, which is Legal Assistance of Western New York, to get your case to a lawyer and to have an intake done. We also have a website. It's called tenantdefense.org. So you can also apply online.
Tenantdefense.org. Do you have the resources at hand, Mark, to handle as many cases as may come your way?
Yeah, we do. We've been at court every day since September 1st, which is when basically the court doors reopened for landlord-tenant matters. And, you know, we're building up capacity, no doubt about it. And I've, we're interviewing folks to bring them on. But right now we do have the capacity to meet the demands that are at court because the court dockets are limited at this point. There are 20 in the morning and 20 in the afternoon.
Listeners, if you want to share your experience or ask questions about this process as we talk about a possible eviction crisis and we talk about the resources available now, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, where you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. I'll take our first phone calls from San Francisco. David listening. I hope you have a clear day, or clearer than it's been in a while, David. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we do. And those masks did come in handy, for dual purpose. You know what I was going to raise with the evictions? Yesterday on C-SPAN, you had the Center for Disease Control chair, and he was saying that there will not really be a vaccine for another solid year. And so this whole eviction issue, the idea of evicting people from, a safe self-quarantine in the middle of an epidemic that casting, millions of people out into the streets is just going to spread the epidemic worse. And so I was just going to raise, how many of the policy makers around the area realize that and have the, whether it's a temerity or just the state of mind to say, screw the rich, they are going to get you killed. Out here in San Francisco, we've got a long tradition of telling the rich, we're not going to get killed for your stupid advice. Whether it's the old beatniks or 100 years ago, the general strikes, or whether it's the hippies, it's a long tradition of telling the rich that we're not going to get killed for your stupid philandering. And in the middle of an epidemic, I don't know if any of you all caught Rachel Maddow last night, but this whole herd. The herd immunity theory would mean that we're going to have 25 times more people die. We're at 200,000 now. They're talking over 6 million dead. That's 25 times more people dead with Trump's, herd immunity theory, and which means sending everybody out there to mix it up and everybody get infected and then, see who the survivors are. So that is not a good governance practice. And again, I was just going to add in, Moses had an old law of Jubilee that when an act of God happens, Moses felt that money was a creation of man. Money was not a creation of human, money was not a creation of God. And that in the middle of an act of God, like a flood, a drought, a plague, a blight, you ignore the money and you just deal with the disaster. And so in this case of, an obvious disaster like a brand new epidemic, we have to ignore the money and do what's necessary to save our lives. And so whether it's tax abatement for landlords, whether it's dropping rental prices to a reasonable level, coming up with a local currency, I don't know if that's been discussed, but, Ralph Nader in Ithaca, New York has been a long, used the Ithaca dollars. Come up with, if the Treasury Secretary is as corrupt as you can get, and, ignore the federal money, come up with local money so you can deal with it.
Well, David, thank you for the phone call. Good luck to all of you in San Francisco and those on the West Coast who've been dealing with the effects of these fires. We've actually got a haze in our sky the last several days because of that. Isn't that amazing? I don't think we're going to see Rochester bucks or Bitcoin or anything like that. I mean, I don't know about a local currency, but there was a lot there. And so let me start with this. I'll ask both Alex and Mark to weigh in on David's points. First of all, Alex, this morning you end up pulling together a lot of people from different layers of government. And David is making an important point here. The pandemic isn't going to be done the day before the election, the day after the election, despite what conspiracy theorists may say. This is not going away. The CDC director did say this week that likely, if there's a workable vaccine, a good horizon would be a widespread availability by the third quarter of 2021. So essentially 1 year from now. One of the big potential manufacturers of vaccines said he didn't think we'll see enough availability till 2024. Let's not go there. We all don't want to, have the rest of our week ruined thinking about that. Could be a year, though. and Alex, I'll start with you on this. David's point is, do the policymakers, do the people who have to respond to this, do they have their heads around the fact that whatever policy is rolling out here is not about one more quarter, one more month? I mean, we've got to be able to deal with this for a while. Do you feel that that's going to happen, Alex?
I feel like our policy solutions so far have been focused on let's slap a Band-Aid on this for now until we know more about what's going to be happening. And I think based on like models like the IHME model are showing us that what the CDC director is saying, this is going to be another year. And so even the CDC moratorium, which I'm hoping that Mark will get a chance to kind of outline how folks can access that. Many people do not know. It's somewhat unclear how to access the CDC moratorium and make sure that you're protected by it. I'm hoping Mark can talk about that later. But a lot of our policy solutions, even that moratorium, the CDC director, knowing that this is probably going to be another year of restrictions of some kind, if not a full shutdown, another full shutdown, those restrictions are going to last. And so the job loss are likely to last too. And so these evictions are also likely to loom large for that time. And the CDC moratorium only goes till the end of this year. So we're still thinking in terms of, can we push this a little bit further until we know more and until we have better solutions. And I think the time for those better solutions is now. I think we know enough to know how long this is going to be and what it's going to take to bring us back.
Okay, Mark Moyo?
Sure. I'll outline two things that either New York or the federal government has done. So the first is already passed a statute in New York State. It's called the New York State Safe Harbor Act. And what that does is it takes some part of the governor's executive order and enshrines it into law. So it says if you had a COVID-related financial hardship during the covered time, which we'll say is from March 7th until everything is back open again, so whatever phase that is, I don't think we know that yet. When everything is back open, then the Safe Harbor Act would end. But what it does is it says any rent that you owe that starts March 7th and runs through the end of the pandemic is not rent that you can be evicted for if you were financially impacted by COVID. Now, every element that you throw into a law is something that can be litigated and appealed and done on and on. So what does it mean to be financially impacted by COVID? I can't answer that question right now. It lays out some reasons that might be considered by a judge or should be considered by a judge as to whether you were financially impacted by COVID, but it doesn't lay out in specific detail every single thing that could be part of that. what it says is you can't be evicted for that amount, but the money is still owed to the landlord, so it can be rendered as a judgment against a tenant as money that's owed to the landlord for that time period. The second thing is the CDC order that came out and was filed on September 4th. And I have to be honest with you and your listeners that it comes out fairly simply. But again, every element of it is something that can be litigated and talked about. And I know that it's being interpreted in many different ways outside of New York. Right now in New York, and I'm adding a third element to this, and I'm sorry if it's confusing, is that we have an administrative order from the New York State administrative judge that says basically nothing can happen, no warrants can be issued until after October 1st of 2020. That is, I think Judge Marks, who is that judge, has stated that he no longer sees any authority in his job to do anything after October 1st. So either the state legislature would have to act, maybe enshrining the CDC's order for New York State or some other solution that they might find to be something that can pass and be signed that protects tenants in some way, if that is what they think their charge is. So the CDC, if I could just go over the elements of it, you, in theory, are supposed to be protected from eviction. And this, the CDC order only binds landlords. So it says landlords can't continue any eviction proceedings if the following are true and an affidavit is signed and given to them. It says, I certify under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct, that you've done your best efforts to obtain all available government assistance, that you earn less than $99,000 for a single individual or $198,000 for a joint tax filing, and that you're unable to make your full housing payment due to substantial household loss of income, and that you've used your best efforts to make timely payments that are as close to the full payment as the individual circumstances may permit, taking into account other non-discretionary expenses. So those are four elements that are laid out in the statement that a tenant has to sign under penalties of perjury. And if a landlord violates this, the penalties are quite stiff. I think it's federal charges of either a year or 5 years in prison and $100,000 fine if they're convicted of violating this order. The question is how and when it applies. I bet there's going to be a federal lawsuit against it, whether it is constitutional. And then every single court that hears this is probably going to interpret it in a different way. So I've heard some stories in other states where somebody handed in the affidavit to the landlord's attorney and the case was dismissed. And here in Rochester, that hasn't happened yet. Even if we do hand over the affidavit, the case is adjourned for some sort of a decision or to be talked about later. But there is not a lot of great guidance out there, and a lot of people are interpreting it differently.
Well, that's why Mark's here, and that's probably why Mark will remain employed in perpetuity. He's the program director of the Housing and Consumer Law Unit, the Legal Aid Society of Rochester. Alex Turner with us, an eviction prevention representative for the Homeless Services Network and a community resource services program director at Catholic Family Center. We're talking about the possible eviction crisis, and I say possible. You know, frankly, a lot of people are already facing that crisis now, and it could get worse in the months to come, likely to get worse given the economic problems with the pandemic, even the problems outside of the pandemic. So they're talking about new resources available and a new coordinated effort to help people in need. And we've got more questions from listeners. So if you've emailed questions, we've got a couple which we'll tee up right after our only break of the hour with them right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, if you've thought about getting solar on your house, you're part of a large group of Americans taking a look at solar options. But what if there was a different way? What if you could get the benefits of solar without having to get panels on your house specifically? The idea is called Community Solar, and a first-of-its-kind program in the country is rolling out locally. We examine Community Solar next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Just real briefly, since it's been a number of weeks before we really dug into epidemiology, maybe it's about time we bring epidemiologists back on and sort of update where we are with the pandemic. But David in San Francisco calling mentioned herd immunity. And if you're not up to speed, the president, one of his close advisors now, has in the past promoted the idea of coronavirus herd immunity. And the president in a town hall this week talked about what he called the herd mentality. I think he meant herd immunity. Can't speak for the president. Would never, ever deign to do so. But I can tell you that the experts say, contrary to what David is saying, most of the experts, Natalie Dean, among many others who I follow in epidemiology, do not really agree with 5 to 6 million deaths, even if we went full herd immunity. But certainly it would be a much bigger number of deaths. I mean, well over 1 million, could be 2 million. And we talk about that like it's sort of a cavalier number. I mean, those are lives. And there's no mechanism to achieve herd immunity right now that could do it in a way that would not overwhelm the healthcare system. That's the concern. I mean, we all remember what it was like this past March and April. Other medical services were on hold as everybody was getting ready to deal with COVID. We don't want to go back there, and herd immunity could deluge a system. So I don't think we're just going to waltz back into herd immunity, and I certainly take David's point that the last thing you want to do is just evict a bunch of people and create even more of a possible problem in the colder months with people without places to go, without services, in close quarters, perhaps at shelters. So it's complicated. Let me work through a couple of listener questions here. First of all, Alex in Greece, different Alex, is asking the following. Alex says, how do your guests, Mark and Alex, verify that a client is truly in need and not just taking advantage of the system and this crisis? Mark Moyo?
Oh, sure. Nobody wants to be brought to eviction court. It's absolutely not taking advantage of the system because it could go the wrong way and ruin your life almost immediately. So no one is, as far as I can tell, is in landlord-tenant court because they want to be. And, you know, speaking with me, our funding has already been paid for, so it's not taking advantage of any sort of monetary reward for speaking with me at court. You're just putting yourself at risk of losing your house. And second, if he's talking about, let's say, money from Department of Human Services or from Catholic Family Center, they have verifiable ways of making sure that people owe money and who they are, and just like DHS does for you know, thousands of people every month in terms of receiving public benefits. So I have, if Alex is asking, and Alex in Greece is asking whether anyone has ever committed fraud against a group in the government, the answer is yes, but it's quite hard, and it's not as pervasive as many people in the public think.
Okay, Alex, you want to add to that?
Yeah, we have a very stringent process for making sure that we can document folks' income during the time that they develop these arrears. And because of the expanded unemployment benefits, we're going back even a little bit further to verify folks' income and to document the needs that they, the expenses that they had. And so we match that up and we look at their basic needs and we see if there's any discretionary income that could have been used to pay this rent. And we try to be as generous as we can and not judgmental. But at the end of the day, if someone has discretionary income and they can't account for it with expenses that make some kind of sense, we're looking at other ways that we can. We're trying to prioritize families that are doing their best to pay the rent with that they had available to them, and we're prioritizing those folks and making sure that they get the help. And if someone had discretionary income during the time that they had, that they developed the arrears, we're looking at other services for them. That they can increase their income going forward, or other protections that they may be eligible for, the legal protections. But in terms of financial assistance, we're documenting as closely as we can the financial situation that put them in the situation they're in, as well as things going forward.
Okay. Let me get Tom in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Tom.
I think all Americans, tenants, landlords, cities, and towns should ask or tell the Republicans of Washington to help American citizens by releasing the funds and agree with the Democrats of the $3 trillion now before America will be worse off than the Depression.
Tom, thank you. So just a little bit of a note on what Tom's talking about. He's talking about the latest updated possible package or extension of relief that Washington has debated and has not been able to come up with a deal for. And I do wonder, looking back now, Alex Turner, now that Washington has spent, and I'm trying to catalog it, I think the CARES Act was $3 trillion. I think they added maybe $2 trillion. A lot of it was small business loans, but certainly not all of it. There was a debate about an ongoing UBI, a universal basic income. Didn't happen. There was a one-time $1,200 for most Americans, as we know, $500 per child, but that was a one-shot. There was talk about different kinds of housing relief on those federal packages. Haven't seen a lot from the federal government that would, you know, sort of represent the kind of help directly for housing or even individuals in the form of a UBI. Is there anything that you haven't seen from the federal government that you think now at this point they need to pass?
So there's two proposals on the table, and I kind of want to talk about both of them. The first one is there's a number it generally happening in congressional circles of $100 billion in rent assistance or rent relief. And that will certainly help. But what's important to remember is that someone has to administer that rent relief. And programs like ours are doing our best to expand to be able to do that. But in comparison to the $17 billion, that went out with the first CARES Act, we're talking about multiplying that by five and adding that on top of what we've already absorbed. And so it's just important to remember that with all of these programs, including unemployment, someone has to administer that assistance and handle those applications. And that can even take away from, someone has to pay the folks that administer that assistance. So when you talk about proposals like UBI, Kamala Harris's proposal of $2,000 a month is certainly on the higher end of things. There's Andrew Yang's proposal of $1,000 a month for each American citizen. That any amount of universal basic income, even if it was a nominal amount, just a couple hundred dollars a month, would take pressure off of the systems, the food security systems, the housing security systems, so that we can focus on the folks that really have serious needs. So I would strongly advise folks to take a look at the numbers and just in an apolitical way, I really appreciate that we need to be bipartisan about this and look at what is the actual problem that we're all facing together and what's the best way for us to get through it together, that landlords and tenants are in this together. And that if we take a look at how do we solve the arrears debt that was accumulated by really fault of no one, how do we resolve that together? And I think we'll create better policy solutions when we think about it that way.
Okay. Mark Moyo?
Yeah, I read a proposal yesterday, and it goes along with some phone calls that I've received, where landlords are in some cases frustrated or upset that their tenants haven't gone to apply for assistance that might be out there. And the proposal I read yesterday, and maybe it was done tongue in cheek, but it might be a workable system, is to it would be basically the state or federal government would cancel the rent for tenants, and then landlords could apply for relief and show whatever they lost. And the documentation could be done on that end, which, you know, might be more effective for landlords to show what they've lost and when. And, you know, that's just one more thing that's out there in terms of how relief could be administered out there.
Yeah, and Mark, that may be the answer that you'd want to direct to a couple of our listeners who've emailed. Let me read both of these emails because I sense that this is relevant to what they're talking about. Sheila writes to say, I have a question about protections for landlords. We are not all rich. When a tenant refuses to pay rent or communicate with the landowner despite still retaining a job, there is currently no recourse for the landlord. The money may still be owed to the landlord, but what are the chances of actually getting that money? We've all been impacted by COVID. The guidance is very loose and never mentions the hardships of landowners, from lack of reimbursements for utilities and rent, not only missing the rental income, but paying the tenant's heat and electricity as well. That's from Sheila. And then Mary Howell says, many upstate New York landlords are small scale. We may have an extra apartment or two. We are not rich. We rely totally on monthly rents to pay property tax, school tax, utility, maintenance, etc. Without rent payments, we can't pay our bills on time. Why is it fair for landlords if we are not paid monthly rent, but we are prevented from finding different tenants who are willing or able to pay rent? This will discourage landlords from renting out housing. It would be more prudent to just leave apartments empty. That's from Mary Howell. So Sheila and Mary Howell, Mark, I'll start with you on those. You've touched on some ideas for landlords. Two similar but slightly different comments from their perspective. What would you tell them?
I mean, back during the stay-at-home order, I was hoping that maybe people would come together and understand that basically all folks are in the same boat, that if a tenant can't pay their rent because they've lost their job, because there was an economic crisis, whatever the cause, then that money is not going upwards, let's say, to the landlords, and then they can't make their payment to the state and local government or to the bank if they have a mortgage or to whomever it might be that might have a mortgage. And therefore, we're all in the same boat, right? It's an economy where money sloshes around under, the rules of contract. But when crazy things happen, then everyone's in the same boat. Everyone owes money to somebody up the ladder, you might say. So I can understand that people want to point the finger and say this person has this much money or they bought a new TV or whatever it might be. But, TVs are pretty cheap these days. It's not like they cost $800 for a regular TV like it in the 80s. So I wish people could see it a little more collectively and say, look, we're all in the same boat. Yes, I have problems. Here's how we can go to whoever might be the authority. At this point, it's got to be the federal government, I think, because they can print their own money and make people's problems either go away or lessen them.
But Alex, Mary Howell is concerned from the possible impact of a cascade effect here of policies. She says, if we're not paid monthly rent, but we're prevented from finding different tenants who are willing or able to pay rent, it could discourage landlords from renting out housing at all. It would be more prudent, she says, to leave apartments empty. Are you worried about that happening?
I think that we're certainly going to face a shortage of affordable housing, either because landlords go out of business or because landlords choose not to rent. I haven't seen data around landlords choosing not to do that. But the long-term impact of this arrears debt and that cascade effect that Mark talked about, both in terms of the debt that the folks who weren't able to pay that rent, they're going to carry that as a judgment against them until they pay it. And when a family that's living paycheck to paycheck can come up with $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, how long would that take? So they're carrying that for long term, and these landlords are also going to be carrying this debt, and they'll have to cover those expenses. So it's certainly a long term impact that we're looking at here, and I think we need to think bigger about how we deal not only with preventing evictions, which moratoriums and other things can do, or at least delay them, but dealing with the arrears debt and the long term impact that will have on families and their landlords. That's something that we need to think about, too.
Let me squeeze in one more phone call. Some of our listeners listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS. Next call comes from Seneca Falls, Charlie. Go ahead, Charlie.
My big confusion here, in the end, landlords tend to be relatively rich, and it's all relative. They're not billionaires. But the Republicans are blocking any relief to the people who need money, and it all ends up in the 1%'s pocket soon enough. Why in the world are the Republicans blocking this? And I'll take the answer up here if you've got an answer.
All right, Charlie, thank you. I mean, we have heard from a number of landlords who do feel that that they don't think it's fair to categorize most landlords as rich. Certainly they understand some are, but I think there's a sensitivity there. But having said that, Alex, just some thoughts for Charlie on how he sees where the money's flowing and who's sort of blocking what help?
I don't know why they block it. I know that in the bailouts, in the CARES Act that we did, there were billions and billions of dollars for corporations that, you look at the larger problem that we're all facing in 10, 20 years, the climate crisis. A lot of these corporations that are getting these bailouts are contributing to that. So there's a really systemic problem. I know we don't have a whole lot of time there, but to be able to put money in the hands of the people that need it, it's going to flow up. They're going to pay their rent. The landlords will pay their mortgage, and it'll end up in the bank's hands anyway. So it might as well pass through a few more on the way up. I guess that's my answer.
Yeah, and I think to Charlie's point, I mean, there are some people who've expressed surprise at the level of anger in the streets of Rochester in the last 2 weeks. And even some sort of self-described moderate Democrats have said, boy, you know, it sounds like what they're calling for is, you know, just tearing down the whole system. Well, to Charlie's point here, you think about all the people who are hurting, and then you look at what's happened in the last 6 months. The L.A. Lakers got a small business loan. Shake Shack got a small business loan. Eventually, the anger is going to boil over when that continues to happen. I'm not saying it should or shouldn't. I'm just observing that it's not all that surprising when that is where some of the relief gets targeted, when a lot of people are hurting, and I don't think Shake Shack and the L.A. Lakers are. And I love LeBron James. Mark Moyo, 30 seconds. Final thoughts from you. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, if you're behind on your rent and you want financial assistance, call 211. If you are looking to get legal assistance, if you have court papers, call 504-6195 or go to tenantdefense.org so that we can help you not get evicted.
All right, tenantdefense.org, 211 resources out there. Mark Moyo, thanks for making the time. This is a subject that is certainly not going away, and we appreciate the periodic check-in here to make sure people know what's out there and what's happening, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks very much.
That's Mark Moyo, Alex Turner. Always good to have you, Alex. I really appreciate the perspective, and I know we'll stay in touch as well.
Great. Thanks, Evan.
All right, listeners, we got much more connections on the other side here.